Let me tell you about the worst possible way to find out your fuel math was wrong. You're 41,000 feet over Canada. It's a clear July evening, and the first thing that happens is a warning chime for the fuel pressure on your left side. You figure it's a pump, then the right side chimes, then one engine spools down to nothing. And while you and your first officer are still reaching for the checklist, the second engine quits too, and the flight deck goes quiet in a way a jet cockpit is never supposed to be quiet. That happened July 23, 1983, and by the time it was over, the airplane had become one of the most famous gliders in the history of aviation. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot one topic at a time. Today we are talking about the Gimli glider, Air Canada Flight 143. Because buried inside that airline story is the single most important skill a private pilot ever learns and almost never practices for real. Gliding a powerless airplane down to a spot on the ground and putting it there. Before we climb into it, let me take care of something. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that? Private pilot instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, and honestly, the milestone we are talking about today, staying calm when the engine quits, well, that's one worth carrying in your pocket. aviationsoul.com. Okay, let's walk through this together because the setup matters. The airplane was a Boeing 767, brand new for its day, one of the first glass cockpit airliners Air Canada operated, and one of the very first Canadian jets to measure its fuel in kilograms instead of pounds. Hold on to that detail. It's the whole ball game. The crew was Captain Bob Pearson and First Officer Maurice Quintal. Good, experienced airline pilots. Nothing about this crew was careless. And that's the part I want you to sit with, because the trap they fell into is the same trap that catches good, careful pilots at your level and mine. Here's what happened on the ground in Montreal. The fuel gauging system on that particular jet had a fault, so the crew had to calculate the fuel load by hand, using a dipstick reading from the tanks and a little math to convert volume into weight. Simple enough, you measure the liters in the tank. You multiply by the density of the fuel, and you get the weight you're carrying. But the number they multiplied by was the density in pounds per liter, not kilograms per liter. The airplane needed its fuel figured in kilograms. And the difference between those two numbers is almost exactly 2 to 1, so they did the math. The math looked right. Everybody cross-checked everybody, and every single person used the same wrong conversion factor. They ended up loading a little more than half the fuel they thought they had. On paper, a full trip to Edmonton with reserves. In reality, not even enough to get there. Now, here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training, and it applies to your Cessna just as hard as it applied to that jet. A cross-check is only worth something if the people checking each other aren't all making the same assumption. 5 people confirming the same bad number is not 5 checks. It's 1 mistake, copied 5 times. I want you to remember that the next time you accept a fuel order, or you eyeball the tanks, or you trust the gauge that read 3/4 last week and reads 3/4 again today no matter how long you flew. Verify with something that fails differently. Look in the tank with your own eyes. Stick it. Do the time and burn math in your head against the clock. One source is not verification. It's just hope with a number attached. So Flight 143 is cruising along at 41,000 feet. Fat and happy, and the fuel that was never really there quietly runs out. Left engine first, then a couple of minutes later, the right, 2 flameouts. And now Bob Pearson is flying the heaviest glider anyone has ever strapped into. Here is where the story turns from a cautionary tale into a flying lesson. So lean in. When both engines quit on that 767, they lost most of their electrical power and a lot of their hydraulics with it. The airplane deployed something called a ram air turbine. Picture a little propeller that drops out into the slipstream and spins from the air rushing by, generating just enough hydraulic pressure to move the flight controls. So Pearson still had a control wheel that did something, but he had no thrust, most of his instruments were dark, and he was coming down whether he liked it or not. The first thing he did is the first thing you must do. He flew the airplane. He set a speed and held it. That speed has a name, and you know it. Best glide. Every airplane has one. In your training airplane, it's a single number on a placard or in the handbook. The airspeed that gives you the most distance forward for every foot you give up going down. Fly faster than best glide and you're trading altitude for speed you don't need. Fly slower and you're sinking like a brick and worse, creeping toward a stall, right. When you have zero power to recover with, best glide is the airspeed that buys you the most time and the most reach, and time and reach are the only 2 things you have left when the engine quits. Pearson didn't have a nice placard for a dual flameout glide in a brand new jet. Almost nobody had ever practiced it. So he and Quintal figured out a glide speed, and Pearson flew it like his life depended on holding it, because it did. You have it easier than he did. Your best glide number is printed for you. So here's the question, and be honest, do you know yours right now, this second, without looking it up? For the airplane you fly most, if the answer is no, that's your homework tonight, because the moment the engine goes quiet is the worst possible time to go hunting for it. The Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, the book your examiner grades you against, is very direct about this. On the emergency approach and landing task, the examiner is looking for you to establish and maintain the recommended best glide airspeed within a tight tolerance, and to do it promptly. Not eventually. Promptly. Pitch for the number. Trim it off so the airplane holds it for you, and then you can lift your eyes and go to work on everything else. And what is everything else? Let's build the flow, because a flow is what saves you when your brain wants to lock up. The one I teach, and the one a lot of instructors teach, walks the alphabet. A, B, C, D, E, A is airspeed. Best glide first, always. Pitch and trim. B is best field. Where are you going to put it? You start that search the instant the noise stops, into the wind if you can. But the first priority is a survivable surface within your glide range. Pearson's B was a problem because he was gliding over sparse country with the ground coming up, and the airplane coming down, and Edmonton was never going to happen. This is where First Officer Quintal earns his seat forever. Quintal had been a Royal Canadian Air Force pilot, and he remembered a former airbase at a place called Gimli, Manitoba, that he thought was within reach. They turned for it. What neither man knew from the cockpit was that the old base had been turned into a public complex, and one of those long runways was being used that very day for drag racing and go-kart events. There were people, cars, and families right there on the pavement they were aiming for. C is checklist. Once the airplane is trimmed and pointed at your field, you run the memory items for a restart if you have altitude and reason to try, and then the printed checklist, fuel, mixture, carb heat, mags, boost pump, in your single. Most engine failures that aren't out of fuel are a starvation or ignition problem you can fix in seconds if you catch it. Try the obvious stuff, but never let the restart attempt steal your eyes off the field. The airplane comes down at the same rate, whether you're staring at the panel or flying the approach. D is declare. Tell somebody. Squawk 7700, key the mic. Say the word Mayday 3 times. Give them who you are, what's wrong, and where you're going. Pearson got a Mayday out. Air traffic control was working the problem right up until the airplane dropped below their radar and radio in the descent. And E is execute. You commit to the field and you fly the pattern you've got, not the one you wish you had. Now here's the piece of this story that every stick and rudder pilot loves, and it's the piece I most want you to take with you. As Pearson turned final for Gimli, he had a problem that is the opposite of the one you'd expect. He wasn't too low, he was too high, and too fast. A clean jet with no engines to spin up the systems that normally slow it down was carrying too much energy, and it was going to overshoot right off the far end into the people and the cars. He needed to lose altitude without gaining airspeed, and Bob Pearson happened to be a glider pilot in his own time on weekends for fun. So he reached for a tool that no 767 crew is ever trained to use, and that every single one of you learned before you soloed, the forward slip. You know this one. You cross the controls. You feed an aileron to bank the airplane one way, and you hold opposite rudder to keep the nose from turning. So the airplane flies down the runway centerline while it's pointed off to the side, presenting its whole flank to the wind. It's ugly and it feels wrong and it works beautifully. That big flat side of the fuselage becomes a giant speed brake, and you drop like an elevator while your airspeed sits right where you want it. Pearson slipped a wide-body airliner, full of passengers. On his approach, he slid that jet sideways through the air to dump the altitude he couldn't afford, straightened it out near the ground, and set it down. The nose landing gear hadn't locked, so it folded on touchdown. That dragging nose actually helped, scrubbing off speed, throwing sparks down the runway. They stopped short of the people. There were injuries getting out, but not a single person died on the airplane or on the ground. And it all came home on a maneuver you can go practice this weekend. So let me pull the lessons out and hand them to you, because that's the whole point of the story. First, best glide is not a number in a book, it's a reflex. When it gets quiet, your hands should pitch for that speed before your conscious mind is caught up. Know it cold for your airplane. Practice pitching to it and trimming it hands off, so the airplane will hold your best glide while you handle the field and the checklist. Second, energy is options. Altitude is time. The higher you are when it quits, the more ground you can reach and the more choices you have. That's an argument for cruising a little higher on a cross country over rough country, and it's an argument for climbing over the airport a bit longer before you strike out over the trees. Every 100 feet you bank is 100 feet of options in the drawer. Third, the slip is a real emergency tool, not a check ride trick. When you find yourself high and hot on a power-off approach to a field, and you will, because judging a glide without an engine is genuinely hard, you don't firewall nothing and you don't dive at the numbers. You slip. Go up with an instructor and fly power-off approaches until you can slip that airplane down to a spot with confidence. The ACS lists the forward slip to a landing as its own task for exactly this reason. The examiner wants to see that you can lose altitude on command without letting the speed run away. That's not a formality. That's the Gimli skill. Fourth, and this is the one that has nothing to do with your hands, cross-check the things that can kill you with sources that fail differently. Fuel especially. The gauge, the dipstick, the tab, the time, the burn rate, the clock on the panel. Air Canada 143 didn't crash because of bad flying. It nearly crashed because 5 careful people agreed on 1 wrong number. Don't confirm your assumptions. Test them. The final report on all of this came from the Canadian Aviation Authorities and a formal board of inquiry led by Justice George Lockwood. And if you ever want the full technical picture, that inquiry and Air Canada's own account lay it all out, right down to the density figure they punched in wrong. It's worth the read. Every accident report is a lesson somebody paid full price for so you could have it cheap. Bob Pearson and Maurice Quintal took an airplane that should have been a smoking hole in a Manitoba field, and they flew it down to a landing with best glide, cool heads, and a forward slip. The exact 3 things sitting in your logbook right now. So go know your best glide number. Go practice a slip until it's boring. That's the assignment. You can find us at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. Fly the airplane first, all the way to the ground, and I'll see you next time in the Pattern.